Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Release of Magic by Martha Carr and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Eva Wilhelm. Chapter 1. The explosion from the necklace took its toll. Lyra still heard a mild buzz in her ears days later. The drive back to Austin was mostly in silence, except for occasional laughter from the troll and the loud sound of chewing. In Missouri, Corrick reached back and grabbed the nearly empty box of Cheez-Its, scowling at the troll. Yumfuck looked up, surprised. "What?" he squeaked. His fur was matted from a mixture of chocolate, jerky, and salt. Corrick shook the box, grimacing at the troll. "You've eaten almost everything!" Lyra furrowed her brow and glanced at Corrick. "You know we can buy more." "It's the principle of the thing." "The principle of road trip etiquette?" Lyra rubbed her temple, willing the mild headache to go away. Corrick reached into the box and pulled out a handful of the tiny squares, throwing them into his mouth. He quickly made a face and looked around for something to drink. "These are just a form of drier Cheetos," he said, gulping down Dr. Pepper. "We've hit a new level of snacking if we're elevating Cheetos to fine dining. I'm not sure if we've gone up or down, though," said Lyra. Corrick handed the box back to Yumfuck, who crawled inside of it and chewed his way out the other side. He fell asleep on the back seat of the custom Mustang, his paws outstretched and his mouth wide open in a food coma. The car quickly fell back into silence. But somewhere during the long stretch in Oklahoma, Lyra finally said what she had been thinking since Summers had managed to incinerate himself. "I'm thinking I failed this mission." She tapped a finger on the steering wheel. "The killer is dead, and the necklace is missing. I got there just in time to be a witness, and that's about it." She looked out at the setting sun across the prairies that ran alongside the highway. The remaining light was throwing purple shadows on the winter ground. The beauty of the scenery was doing nothing for her mood. "We don't measure failure the same way on Orisaran," Corrick said tersely. "It's not about the right or wrong, just the consequences, and by that measure we accomplished half of the assignment." "No more killer. I get it. You realize that thanks to erasing the last minutes of that party, no one knows exactly what happened to Bill Summers or the Dean. It's going to be a permanent cold case. The Dean's family will never know." "Not much can be done about that," Corrick told her, "beyond what the Order of the Silver Griffins were willing to do. It was nice of them to hold that little service on Montrose Beach and pour the ashes into Lake Michigan. Someone took the time to remember both of them. Even if we couldn't tell where Summer's ashes ended and Dean Mustin's began." Lyra shook her head. "There has to be some kind of spell that would let us leave the Dean's family, at least with a false memory of what happened to him, like a heart attack and a nice funeral, even if it's a lie. Summers only had that odd little friend Randolph. He looked like an easy mark for a simple spell." "We've learned the hard way that when we meddle with magic, even with good intentions, other problems pop up," said Corrick. "As for the necklace, it will surface. It's far too powerful to stay hidden forever." "Small comfort, like knowing someone has an atom bomb somewhere out there, and when it goes boom, we'll know where they were keeping it all along." Lyra watched an old Crown Vic weaving in and out of traffic along the highway, narrowly missing bumpers. "Would love to pull that asshole over," she muttered. "If you continue to take what happened in Chicago personally, it'll be harder to focus. Let it go and put your attention on whatever we're supposed to be doing next." "There's no we at this point, Corrick. We have no leads of any kind. You go back to your world and I go back to mine." Yumfuck let out a loud snore in his sleep and curled up into a ball, his fur sticking to the seat. "With a troll." "Okay," she admitted. "That's a sizable wrinkle, but I got myself into that one. Besides, your life in Orisaran will call you back at some point." "Hopefully not quite so abruptly. But yes, if my king and queen asked me to return, I would oblige. So far, that is not the case." Lyra gave Corrick a sidelong glance, pushing her dark bangs off her face. "They have some other plan already, I guess?" "I am assuming the same, but I don't know. Look, that conversation can wait. Are we not going to talk about your mother?" Again with the we. Lyra pursed her lips, irritated. A groan went up from the troll, his legs running in his sleep. I can be of assistance. There's still a lot you have to learn. Not only about who you really are, but how to use all of that to your best advantage. Lyra bit her bottom lip, pulling out from behind an 18-wheeler to follow a long line of different colored pickup trucks cruising down the left lane. The silver Dodge truck directly in front of her had a single large star in the back window. It felt good to know they were getting closer to home. "I lead this investigation," she said finally. "I call all the shots, and you keep the magic to a minimum so we don't both end up on some tranquilizer drip swearing we're not crazy right alongside my mother." "Agreed," he answered. "We'll find a way to get her out of there." "That's not what has me tied in a knot." Lyra gripped the steering wheel. "It's what 15 years in a psych ward has to have done to her." "There's no way you could have known your mother was telling the truth. We've noticed your species prefers to believe in what it can see, and has been known to react badly to alternate theories. An entirely different world of species that can perform magic could be seen as an enormous threat. If your sci-fi movies are to be believed, your government's first reaction would have included cages and vivisection." "Maybe that's just the overcaffeinated idea of some writer on a deadline," said Lyra. "I keep holding on to the idea that if she's half light elf, everything says she must be. If she is, her otherworldly DNA helped her out. Maybe she figured out a way to create some kind of life for herself in there." 15 years. Her voice trailed off. "We'll figure out the rest of this another day," Korik reassured her. "Come on," he said, holding up his fist and smiling. "Let me do one of those strange handshakes. Don't leave me hanging." "We call it a fist bump," she returned his smile, despite everything weighing on her mind. "You picked up a lot of lingo from one visit to the bowling alley." "That's more like it." He looked around the car. "Do we have any of the nacho Doritos left?" "That's why you want to stay, isn't it?" She sighed. "Our junk food has sedated many a foe, apparently. You're the only one who would know what's left in the snack bag back there. Maybe Yumfuck didn't get into everything. I gave up on it back in southern Illinois." She tapped the brakes. "Thought I'd lose a finger going for a stuffed pretzel bite." "Those things are addictive. I suggest when we get back to Austin, one of the first things we do is look for some real food." "You mean pizza, don't you?" The waitress assured me it covered every major food group on this planet. "Pizza for breakfast again it is. But this time, we're going to try my favorite." "Which is?" "You'll see. The suspense is worth it." Erica Behrens sat at a round wooden table topped with formica in the day room of the Claridge Psychiatric Hospital, flipping over cards looking for the ace. Her long brown hair hid her face, and she made a point of not making eye contact with anyone. The small ward had no more than 15 psychiatric patients at any given time. 10 of them were long-term, like Erica, and she had learned how to form alliances with each of those patients, if not friendships. The other 5 were a constantly rotating cast of characters who had tried something stupid to harm themselves or had pissed off their family just enough with their bad choices that they wanted them gone for a little while. A tall male orderly dressed in a white uniform right down to his soft-soled white shoes strode into the room and clapped his hands sharply.
"Time for 6 o'clock medication. Okay, everyone, you know the drill. Line up to the right of the window and the nurse will place the medication on your tongue, handing you the glass of water. Swallow the pills, stick out your tongue, lift it so that we can see that the medication is gone and this will all go smoothly."
He clapped his hands sharply again. Once. Twice.
"Come on, people. Dinner tonight's burritos, everybody's favorite. We don't need anyone holding up the line or causing trouble. Ms. Behrens, go get in line."
Erica got up slowly and shuffled toward the line. She had mastered the look of the drug-induced haze years ago. Her paper slippers made a skitch-skitch noise against the worn-out linoleum floor. The red-headed girl in front of her was young and looked nervous. She was a new admittance, came in just last night, and she kept looking furtively from left to right, wringing her hands. She was crying hard enough that a sheen of snot glossed her lips. Erica wanted to reach out and comfort the girl. She figured she had to be about the same age as her own daughter, Lyra. But the risk that someone would notice and discover she was faking her torpor was too great.
"Maggie, you're next."
The orderly was doing his sharp clap again, trying to get the new girl to move forward in line. All it did was make her cry harder, an irritating whimper coming out of her trembling lips.
"Burrito night!"
An oversized woman with wiry gray hair sticking out all over her head was stomping her feet in the back of the line. She was also a fairly recent addition to the ward, but Erica had a good idea that she was at the start of a very long stretch. The old woman had had enough and started shoving the people directly in front of her in line, still yelling, "Burrito night!" at the top of her lungs. Three orderlies immediately rushed her, restraining her and dragging her out of the room.
"Burritos in your room tonight if you're awake enough to know they're there,"
one of the orderlies laughed. Erica took the opportunity to surreptitiously raise her hand and gently push the crying girl in front of her, moving her forward as if she had no will of her own.
"Even if it's the last good thing I can do."
It was the only really good thing her mother had given to her, and she had done her best to pass it on to Lyra.
"Never back down from doing the right thing," she thought. "Never."
Erica caught a glimpse of the thin scars that marred the soft white underside of the girl's arms. The rumor was that her parents were wealthy and well-connected.
"Definitely a tourist," thought Erica.
As soon as her involuntary hold was over, they would find her a more comfortable place where they could hide her away. When Erica got to the top of the line, the nurse barked, "Name!"
"Erica Behrens."
Erica opened her mouth and held out her hand for the glass of water. As the nurse handed her the water, she let two of her fingers brush against the woman's skin and whispered one of the few spells she had learned from her mother.
"Invisibilia," she muttered.
She took a sip of the water and then opened her mouth wide, the three capsules still on her tongue, clearly showing. The nurse gave a sharp nod and barked, "Next!" Erica had learned over time that the spell only lasted for a few seconds and was really only good for creating an illusion on smaller things. She had tried to use it once or twice to make it look as if her bed was occupied when she was still intent on breaking out, but it never lasted long enough or was big enough to influence people who weren't in the room when she cast the spell. It took a few stays in isolation in a padded cell before she decided to stop trying to escape and instead focus on making things better for herself. She still held on to the belief that one day her beautiful, funny, and clever daughter would figure things out and come and get her. She knew Lyra Behrens was on the police force, but it had been a few years since she had seen her in person. Lyra had come over 4 years ago to tell her that her own mother, Mara Behrens, had disappeared. The weight of those words had crashed over Erica, taking her breath away.
"You're alone!"
she had gasped, shocked and alarmed. Erica reached out, grasping her daughter's arm in desperation. She tried to tell her where to look for her grandmother, but the second Erica started to talk about Aura Seren again, Lyra pulled back, even stood as if she was ready to go, determined to go. Still, Erica had persisted and tried to tell Lyra how to create a doorway, ask the elves for help. The orderlies overheard and dragged her away. They gave her an injection that left her groggy for a week and made it impossible for her to pull off a spell of any kind. Lyra had visited her mother again, months later, but Erica could see the toll it was taking on her daughter and clasped her hand tightly, whispering,
"Don't come back. Get on with your life and forget I'm here."
Lyra had protested, but Erica had been thinking about what to do for months.
"Invisibilia,"
she had whispered, clinging to her daughter's hand, conjuring the image of an empty space where her mother sat. She held on to the image as hard as she could, knowing the intensity of her feelings would help push the idea further into Lyra's heart. It wasn't as if she expected Lyra to forget about her, but she knew the spell would help shroud Lyra's feelings for her and help her only child get on with her life. So far, the spell was working. Still, Erica Behrens had never given up hope that someday her daughter would be ready and figure out her true heritage in time to free her mother without exposing them both to danger. Then together, they would find out what had become of Mara Behrens. Every day she woke up wondering if today was that day.
You're crazy. Thin crust all the way.
Korik folded the slice like he'd seen people doing at the large table next to him, pushing half of it into his mouth. They were sitting on metal stools at a long, thin, stainless steel counter outside of a low-slung red brick building in Austin. It was a warm winter morning, the kind Austin was famous for. Large neon letters over their heads spelled out Home Slice Pizza. Korik still had a knit hat pulled down over his ears, and his long hair was pulled back into a ponytail. The waitress gave him a thumbs up as she leaned through the window service and refilled his Dr. Pepper. "Good call leaving the troll in the car," he said. "But when he smells the grease, he's going to be pissed. We need to bring a peace offering."
"I'm the one who said thin crust is better. Roll it out thin, till it bakes into a giant cracker for a crust. You didn't seem to mind deep dish back in Chicago," Lyra pointed out.
"That's before you took me to Home Slice," he replied, looking around the small restaurant on the south side of Austin. The thin white paper plate in front of him was soaked through with grease.
"Stopping for more pizza before we got back to my place was your idea.
Granted, a really good one. I have to admit, this is not half bad. This is as close to New York-style pizza as you can get here in Austin."
"Your phone is buzzing," mumbled Korik.
Lyra winced, watching the grease run down Korik's chin.
"Chew with your mouth closed, dude!"
He pointed a greasy finger in the direction of a pile of vibrating small white napkins.
"Swallow, Korik, swallow!"
"Hello?
Hagen, slow down, what is it?"
Lyra leaned toward the small window and waved at the waitress.
"We're going to need the rest to go."
"What is it?" asked Korik, wiping his hands. "This grease is tenacious."
"That was my partner. There's a case. All hands on deck."
"How does he even know you're back in town?"
"I called when I went to the bathroom to check in. It's a cop thing," she said with a shrug. "I'll drop you back at my place. The troll's piece is coming out of your share of the leftovers."
"Not a chance on either one, Lyra." "Okay, he can have my pizza. But if I'm going to stay here on Earth for a while, then I'm going to stay by your side as much as I can."
He held up his hands to stop her from saying anything else. "I understand it's a police investigation, but I'm not sitting around your tiny house with a troll for hours on end. And no, sitting out at the bar is not much better."
"Fine, I don't have time to argue, but we're still dropping off the troll, and you stay back by the car. Under no circumstances do you interfere."
"I mean it," she warned, throwing down a few dollars for a tip.
"Do you normally get this agitated at the start of a case?"
Korik scooped up the box as they headed for the car.
"Normally, I make a point of not rushing. That's the way you miss clues. But these are special circumstances. A child is missing, presumed kidnapped, and one person is already dead. We have a window of just a few hours before this could turn into another homicide. Besides, this is not the moment I want more people to realize magic is a thing. It's gone local, and Siegfried and Roy were really out of this world."
"Only Siegfried?"
Lyra scowled at Korik and slid into the front seat. "But yes, I get your point," he said, buckling up. Lyra turned on the lights and siren and gunned the car out of the parking lot. Chapter 2. There was yellow and black tape around Pick One Up's parking lot, stretching out to the street. Patrol officers were standing in front of a small crowd on both sides of the mini-mart, holding back the looky-loos who had walked over from the nearby cookie-cutter subdivision a block away. The day was turning out to be one of those hot winter days that were pretty typical for Austin. Lyra scanned the crowd as they pulled up and parked behind the short line of black-and-white Austin police cars. It was her usual practice when first arriving at a crime scene. Never know what kind of clue is sitting right out there in front. The oddest things become important later. She quickly formed a visual map of the area in her head. Behind the blocks of starter home ranchers and two-story houses was a dense patch of woods that was full of homeless people who rarely came out during the day. Lyra had cruised past this area many times in the middle of the night, checking on leads and seen the small crowds milling about in the parking lot. Hagen swore they even had a generator to power up stolen cell phones and keep a small refrigerator going. The taqueria truck in the far corner of the lot would have been buzzing with activity till sunrise. "Guarantee there was a line of hungry people with just enough for a breakfast taco," she said quietly. They would be the best witnesses. Korik already knew better than to say anything and got out to stretch his legs, but stayed by the Mustang. Lyra looked at the uniforms standing near the door of the mart, quickly spotting Detective Hagen. He was taking notes, nodding his head, rolling his hand, trying to get the two officers in front of him to talk faster. He was clearly pissed off. He saw Lyra as she ducked under the tape and started waving frantically in her direction. There was a sheen of sweat on his face. Lyra recognized all the signs of a case going sour, fast. Was there more? Hagen turned his focus back to the two officers, his eyebrows raised and his pen poised in the air.
"Hey, Detective Behrens," said the younger officer.
"Richie?"
"If we're done with the pleasantries," Hagen snapped.
"We're done, Detective," the officer said.
"Anyone go into the woods to talk to the transients?" Lyra turned her attention to the line of woods just a few blocks away. The tops of the older oak trees were visible from where they stood.
"Not yet, no,"
Richie said.
"Well, then grab a few more people and see what you can find out,"
Hagen said impatiently, waving again, this time at nearby officers.
"Hold on," said Lyra. "Don't head out just yet. Look, they're not suspects. They're possible witnesses. Don't treat them like suspects. Don't mess with their belongings. Don't threaten anyone with anything. Don't find reasons to arrest anyone. We need them to cooperate, and we need them to want to do it now. Is that understood?"
She waited till she got an affirmative from every cop. "You have an hour to find something," she said. "If you can do it in less time, that's better. Don't edit what you hear. Just write it down. Let us decide what's useful."
"Now go.
Go," Hagen ordered. He pulled a handkerchief from his back pocket and mopped his face and the top of his balding head.
"Hate these fucking cases. Only monsters steal kids."
"Where's the dead guy?" Lyra already knew he must be inside of the store. There was a swarm of technicians in blue booties circling around the front counter, bending down, meticulously retrieving things and dropping their findings into clear evidence bags. Still, she wanted to hear what Hagen had to say about it. Cases involving children always got him wound up, and he had to talk the whole thing out for Lyra to get the bits and pieces she really needed. It was a process.
"The owner. He's behind the counter. Damnable thing. He died on his knees, still propped up. His head is resting on the shelf back there. Near as I can tell, the dumb fucker bent down to get a sod off, but never got back up. The gun is still there under his head. Well, what was left of his head."
"And the child?"
"His 6-year-old niece, Lucy Kate."
Hagen flipped open his small notebook and read from his notes. He was reluctant to type anything into the department-issued tablet. Everything about him was old school.
"According to his daughter, that's her sitting in the patrol car over there doing her best to pull it together."
Lyra looked over and saw the young woman sitting in the back seat with the door open, resting her head on the seat in front of her. "Reality still hasn't sunk in," she thought.
"According to his daughter, he was babysitting while the mom worked a night shift stocking a Walmart."
Hagen tapped his notebook. He was already chewing on an idea. Lyra gave him a moment to put it into words.
"The money from the register is gone," he said, scowling. "But you should see it in there. Neat and clean. No fuss. Except for the blood splatter from the victim, nothing else is out of order. It's like the killer waited for the store to be empty. No sign of anyone rushing out or hiding behind something."
"Or they let him pass," said Lyra. There was a well-known code among the homeless in the rougher parts of Austin. See nothing, do nothing, say nothing. And if that's what happened, and whoever this is didn't shoot any of them?
"Then this is more personal, and he would have known about the code."
"Fuck me." Hagen pushed the palm of his hand against his belly.
"Damn heartburn."
"This gives us a place to start," said Lyra. "Let's go look inside." She glanced back at Korik, who was leaning against the Mustang, carefully observing everyone around him. It was a sign of Hagen's frustration that he didn't say anything about tall, blonde, and handsome waiting for her. Korik locked eyes with Lyra and gave her a nod, his eyes briefly lighting up, glowing from within.
He's itching to use magic.
She turned away, letting the thought go, and pulled on a pair of blue gloves and booties before stepping into the store. "Found anything yet?" she asked the older technician, Harriet, who was carefully picking something up off the ground with tweezers. She was known to be no-nonsense and really didn't give a shit how someone else was feeling. Lyra liked working with her.
Oh, hey, Lyra. Nothing definitive. So much useless DNA in this place, including way too much old semen. What are people thinking? The little girl was sleeping back there. She pointed toward the door behind the counter that was open slightly. No signs of a struggle or any resistance. She may not have been awake. Lyra glanced at the food racks closest to the door. Several of them were empty. The same was true of a few of the boxes of candy just underneath the front of the counter. There were people in here, she said, pointing. You know this because, he asked, because the shelves that aren't near the door are all full like they were recently stocked, but everything close to the door is just about picked clean, easier to grab and go. But there are no bloody footprints. No one went near the body, including whoever shot him. Lyra stepped carefully around the counter. Okay if I go back here? Yep, said Harriet. We're done. I told the coroner to wait till you got a look for yourself. I know how you like to see the crime scene. What's it saying to you?
That they wanted the girl. This guy is collateral damage.
Lyra bent down to get a better look at the dead man. His finger was resting on the trigger. He'd been inches from coming out ahead.
Miss is as good as a mile, Lyra whispered.
The mother came rushing in, hysterical, and had to be dragged off and medicated, Hagen said. No father to speak of. Mother swore up and down the father wouldn't have cared enough to do this.
You know, the thing that bothers me the most is that whoever did this knew not to shoot any of the homeless people standing around. Even if they were all outside, which is unlikely, he would have still been visible, but nobody cared. A warm curl of anger grew inside her, spreading out to her limbs. This wasn't personal. It was professional, she spat.
She glanced down at her hands and saw her fingertips start to glow cherry red through the thin blue latex gloves. She balled her hands into fists and looked away, unsure whether her eyes were glowing. She needed to get to Corrick. Excuse me, she said, stepping carefully back around the counter, keeping her head down. She hurried out the front door of the Pick One Up, shoving her gloved hands into the pockets of her leather jacket. Corrick stood up straighter as she got closer, a look of concern on his face.
The magic is coming over you, isn't it?
You knew this would happen? Why didn't you tell me? She asked, exasperated. She pulled out her hands, ripping off the gloves to look at her fingertips. There was still a faint glow. How bad is this going to get?
There's still so much to tell you. Volumes. Remember, my original job was not to help a half-elven cousin learn to control her powers. It was to find a killer and a necklace. Take a deep breath, he said, taking one himself. Think about the first thing you learned. Feelings, control, magic. It's all tied to your DNA, your very cell structure. The more you can focus, the more you can bend and shape the magic and use it purposefully.
Lyra took a step back, shaking her head. No, no, I'm not using magic to solve a case, she insisted, pushing her dark hair out of her face. What are you thinking?
That you have a case to solve.
What happened to worrying about the Order of the Silver Griffins? Aren't there still some pretty severe repercussions for playing Bewitched? And how would I explain any of it? I suppose we would do another amnesia spell.
Lyra was talking faster and faster, pacing in front of Corrick. You're considering it, aren't you?
Corrick was keeping his voice low and measured, trying to calm her down.
What in the hell are you doing, Lyra?
Detective Hagen had stomped his way across the parking lot, but Lyra, for once, wasn't paying enough attention to her surroundings. She shook her head no at Corrick.
Where I'm from, we put the preservation of life ahead of all things, especially the lives of our children.
That was a low blow, Corrick, Lyra said through clenched teeth. The anger started to rise inside her again, taking over her thoughts. This time she could feel her eyes glow and the world around her became crisper, clearer. It became easier for her to see how all the events connected and what to do next. She started to calm down, but instead of resetting back to her normal state, she felt something new inside of her. A new power. A presence. She held her hands out in front of her and watched as symbols appeared on the backs, glowing as they got more prominent. She could feel the power surging through her body.
What the fuck?
Hagen stumbled and then spun around to see if anyone else had noticed, turning back to shield Lyra from the nearby crowd.
Fortunately, most of them were too busy looking toward the crime scene.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?